We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 407, brought to you by betonline.ag. Remember, if you're a gambler out there or you want to be a gambler, use code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag and you get a 50% welcome bonus. That is free cash to do what you want with. Today's episode, we've got Dan Zimborski from Fangraphs on the show. He has been on the show twice before this. He's a really interesting, fun guy to talk to. One of the smartest baseball minds on the internet. He does the Zips projections. He gives a little synopsis of all of the data and everything that goes into those projections, which are very highly respected projections. People, sort of the go-to projections. One of the go-to projections. So he's just, like I said, really smart guy, but also a very funny baseball guy to talk to because there's always a tangent behind everything. So we definitely went off on a couple tangents in this episode. My conversation with him lasted about 45 minutes. You'll hear that in a couple of minutes. But before that, I just want to touch on a couple of housekeeping items. The March 14th spring training weekend. Those tickets are sold out, obviously, but you might be down there that weekend going to the games. We're going to be there on Friday. We've got a small group of us going on the Friday night game, and then a huge group, like almost 200 people there on Saturday. If you're down there that weekend, if you're in the Tampa area and you want to hang out, we have an after party sponsored by Sailor Jerry at the Yard of Ale. It's a bar called the Yard of Ale in Soho from 4 to 7 p.m. on Saturday, March 14th. You do not need a ticket to come to that bar, to come to that event. We've got some awesome drink specials that are going to be going on thanks to Sailor Jerry. So if you are interested in coming to that, Yard of Ale in Soho in Tampa. You can also tweet us if you have any questions about that, or you can email the show as well. Quickly, the other dates, they are on the website. Go to shop.bronxpinstripes.com. And you go to the events section and you can check out the events. We've got the first one of the season, May 9th. That's a Saturday versus the Red Sox. That should be a hell of a good time. June 13th, we've got something special. We're going to the Trenton Thunder game. It's a home game for them in Trenton. And it's a double-A game. I've never been to a double-A game before. We've got like an all-day thing planned. It's going to be all afternoon, pre-gaming. We're going to be tailgating. We've got some fun activities going on. And then we got the game as well. So if you're interested in that, check that out. June 26th, Friday night versus the Chicago Cubs. And then the last home event of the season, August 22nd versus the Blue Jays. If you guys have been to one of our events in the past, you know how much fun they are. I think they're getting better and better with each passing event. Last year, we sort of ended with a bang with the playoffs. We had 500 people at the ALDS in Sections 205 and 206, and I hope it is as rowdy at all of those events in Section 205 and 206 this season in the Bronx. All right, I'm going to stop yapping now. Stay tuned for my conversation with Dan Zimborski. Joining the podcast once again is Dan Zimborski from Fangraphs. He is, you're the godfather of projections. How about that?
Am I? Yeah, I don't know if I'm the godfather. I'm a good friend of projections. Maybe like a mid-level thug of projections.
Well, I've noticed, and I don't know if this is just because you've been on the podcast a few times now or what, but if someone throws out a projection, they usually, their go-to is Zips.
Well, that's because it's easy to find. There's a lot to say for ease. I mean, I tend to take the first thing I can find with the least effort also. So that always works.
Yeah, it's just right there underneath the season on Fangraphs. Very, very clear to find.
Yeah, I think it's seniority maybe because I've been around forever at this point.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and they're obviously you got to back it up and your projections have been accurate as projections can get. Obviously,
there's we're letting the word accurate do a lot of work for us there.
Yeah, it's all about margin of error, and if you just got to be better than the next guy, Dan.
Yeah, less crappy than the others. That's the dream. It's the saddest dream that anyone ever had.
So how's your offseason been? It's been quite the offseason for Major League Baseball.
It's been a better offseason than last year. I mean, yeah, there's some disappointing stories, but things are happening. And the worst is when nothing is happening.
Yes.
And when you're employed to write for a living about baseball, when nothing's happening, that's kind of a problem. And, you know, really from like mid-December to February last year, there was nothing happening.
Yeah, it was the first time you were on the show last year. It was right around this time last year, maybe a couple weeks earlier. But Manny Machado and Bryce Harper were still out there in free agency.
Yeah, now there's nobody left, really. I mean, yeah, there's players left, but there are no difference makers left. We kind of know at this point what teams are going to look like.
So, and that also makes it much a clearer picture for Zips and what we're going to be talking about today. Because last year, I think we had the conversation about, well, two of the best players in baseball are not even on a roster at that point. So that made it kind of interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, it makes it easier to talk about, but it's also easier. It also helps when nothing's happening because then it's okay to be a little wrong because you didn't know what was going on.
Use it as an excuse. I see.
Yeah, at this point, though, the offseason, with everybody signed, I kind of have to know what's going on or I'll be in trouble.
Mm-hmm. All right, so give the people a little bit of a refresher on what Zips is, if they maybe were not listening a year ago.
Okay, well, Zips is a computer projection system. It's a very complex one at this point after more than 15 years of work and accumulated data in it. It starts with every player. It establishes a baseline based on their actual stats. Various X stats or Z stats, as I call them, because Zips is involved. And it assembles a large cohort of similar players in history to see how they aged, how they matched the player's baseline at similar portions of their career. And then from there, Zips extrapolates and makes kind of an educated guess as to where a player's going, you know, complete with margins of error and all that good stuff. And in the end, you hope that you don't do too poorly.
Yeah, that's one of the most interesting things I like about looking at the blogs that you put up on each team is the player comps. And you said it finds a player at a similar point in their career with similar data behind them and to sort of come up with the aging curve. And I mean, to me, I find that to be the most interesting because you're comparing them to players that we already know the end result of. So it's fun to take a look at some of the players and like, you compared the Gerrit Cole comparison is Greg Maddux. And I was actually very surprised by that because when you watch them pitch, they're nothing alike.
Yeah. It the thing is, when you have a picture of that caliber, you don't really have a lot of comparisons in history. These are statistical comps. You don't have, you know, I would love if we had pitch FX data for, you know, the 90s and the 80s and the 70s. But we don't. We have, you know, basic statistics for most players. And people forget when they look at like the strikeout totals, but Greg Maddux was not a low strikeout pitcher. It's just that we're up like 60% in strikeout rate since Maddux was around. I mean, he wasn't Nolan Ryan or anything, but he was in the he was like in the top 10 in the NL for strikeouts like six or seven times and in the top five several times. I mean, he was a strikeout pitcher as hard as that seems now, and also when you remember him at the end of his career when he was a very soft tosser. But I mean, there have been worse first comparisons because remember, Zips is comparing to a large group. The first player is always interesting, but not really that much more, you know, determinative on the projection than, say, the third most similar player. But it's fun, and I like fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's fun, and it also makes you, you know, when you think about Greg Maddux, you're like, well, he was top 10 in the NL in strikeouts, yet he threw all those complete games on like 94 pitches. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we actually call a stat, you know, a Maddux.
Yeah, well, the Maddux is it's a complete game under 100 pitches. Is that?
Okay, a Maddux start. It's a complete game. It's a shutout on fewer than 100 pitches. I know at some point they were talking about doing a time for it also, but I don't think they did that. But it's complete game shutout. I think it's 100 pitches.
So when Nathan Eovaldi used to pitch for the Yankees, I used to call an Eovaldi four innings, 100 plus pitches.
And of course, I guess a Traxler would be 4 innings, 100 pitches, 7.5 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Not many, you know, 2-hour and 15-minute complete games like Maddux used to throw. But yeah, some of these other comparisons, the one that jumped out at me, and it's interesting because there's not really much data on him, is Mike Ford, who had a really good limited plate appearances last year. I think he only had like 160 plate appearances last year. But the comp that you have in there is Tino Martinez.
I mean, it's similar players at similar points in their career. Mm-hmm. It's a fan of Ford. I mean, in his limited time, I mean, he did have a 900 OPS. He did hit very well in AAA this year. Of course, everyone did. But he's shown some signs in the minors, except for the year before. And I think Tino is better. And you also have to remember that Tino kind of, this was, Ford's not a young player, and Tino was slightly getting off his peak at this point anyway. There have been better. I won't lie. There have been better first comps, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, both for Ford and for Voit, Zips is pretty high on. I think for Ford, it was like 118 OPS plus, and then for Voit, it was like 120. I wrote it down, but of course, it's eluding me at the moment. But both pretty solid projections for those guys.
Yeah, the projections as a rule for the Yankees were pretty solid. Mm-hmm. I think that to complain about the Yankees, generally someone would have to be very greedy to complain about the projections at this point. Because, I mean, I ran the seasonal numbers, you know, the very, very first run of seasonal numbers. I ran those back on Friday, and it had the Yankees, you know, winning 100 games on average, which was, you know, the best projection in the AL, and only one behind the Dodgers.
Yeah, the floor on the team seems high because when you look at last season and everything went wrong that could go wrong, and they still won 103 games, and maybe they outperformed what they were expected to do. A lot of those guys outperformed, like Gio Urshela is one that outperformed, but the floor is still extremely high. I think you wrote something maybe a couple months ago that something like the Yankees overprepared.
I was talking about that last winter when they were doing it. They were essentially over-engineered.
Yeah.
You know, how, like, an airplane is over-engineered for safety. It doesn't have, you know, like, one system and then it backs up and everybody crashes. The Yankees, I mean, they were a competitive team, and they had spare plans at most positions. Now, obviously, they didn't want to, and there was some luck that it worked out so well. But Branch Rickey used to say, hopefully it's a real quote and not one that was just attributed to him. He said that luck is the residue of design.
Mm-hmm.
And the Yankees were designed to have fallback positions better than most teams in baseball. Probably only the Dodgers equaled them in plan Bs. And they needed them, and they worked out. So it's really hard to complain about what happened, I guess.
Well, then it makes you wonder, though, like, what happens if plan A goes to plan and things work out? What's the ceiling for this team? And already plan A has not worked out because the Yankees are down 2 out of 5 starters, and it's not even March 1st.
Yeah, the good thing, sort of, I don't know if it's called a good thing, but that 100-win projection, it already factors in less time for Severino, you know, less time for Paxton, so it's already being a little bit grumpy about their predictions. I don't use the Fangraphs depth chart playing time precisely, but I was very close on Severino and Paxton. And in my sim, I both had them averaging about 130 innings.
And is that so, because they're both coming off seasons in which they spent time injured? Or was that built in? Did you run these numbers after you knew about?
I set the depth charts that I used for the most recent. Every time I run a season sim, I update all the depth charts that, mm-hmm. that I use for it.
Gotcha.
And so I did it right. Really, it was really a couple hours after the Severino injury happened or was announced. So it is up to date through that. Nothing that happened over the weekend is in there. But it does have, it was already grumpy about it for that specific reason.
Yeah. And injuries are obviously built into the projections, even just on sort of like a macro basis, right? Like injuries happen, so that sort of has to be built in.
Zips looks at injuries generally. I tend to keep Zips fairly agnostic. It'll be aware of those injuries after the season. It's just that when I have to actually sim the teams, then I have to actually decide who's going to play. And that's, you know, a different challenge because, you know, I like to have Zips project as many people as possible. And when you go, like, down the Zips, you know, there's not going to be 400 games started from pictures. I mean, that just wouldn't happen. Like, for instance, the official projection that's agnostic had Paxton at 150 innings. Am I looking at the right one? Oh, I'm looking at last year's actual results. And
yeah,
I'm
I was
like,
gonna say.
I was like, I didn't project Severino to have three starts. That doesn't make sense. Like,
God, I hope he has more than three starts, or else
that would be bad. But no, I had Severino at 166 going into the season, like at the preseason. Paxton 143, so those are down a little bit. Zips is naturally not going to have, you know, pitchers average 220 innings because, you know, pitchers are fragile, even the best ones. Cole got a 200 inning projection, but that's hard to do.
Well, he's like the cream of the crop right now, and he's coming off two of the best seasons we've seen, specifically one of the best seasons. But I know Zips sort of calculates three-year data, right? So is that why?
3 or 4 year generally. It depends on their age. 4 years for players in the middle of their career because they're more stable and the data is more predictive. Once players are very young or very old, the farther you go back, the predictive value of that data goes down quite aggressively low. It just, you know, recent performance is more important for young and old players.
Yeah, and when you compare Zips to maybe some other projections, Cole's actually lower. I mean, I think Zips still has him at like 5.5 WAR season, which is great. But I've seen like 6.8, or maybe even I saw 7 projected WAR season from Cole.
Yeah, I think, now that it's been adjusted to the Fangraphs WAR, which does use FIP, it has Zips at 6.4 for Cole, 6.3 Steamer. Okay. 6.8 depth charts because we project a lot of innings on depth charts. But I mean, there's nothing to complain about. If you know, if I had been an AL Cy Young voter last year, I would have voted Gerrit Cole for the Cy Young over Verlander.
All right, do you vote on anything?
I voted. Yeah, I've been a member for 4 years now, and I voted in 3 of the off seasons. 2 rookies, NL, and Cy Young. Because Cincinnati, I'm in the Cincinnati chapter because I live in Ohio.
Yep.
And it's a small chapter. There's like 12 active members. So, you know, we can rotate out and everyone gets to vote. But like Jake Jaffe has been a member for like 10 years and he's never gotten to vote because he's in the New York chapter.
There's a lot of guys ahead of him.
There's a lot of guys ahead of him. There's also more old school guys. There's not a lot of old school Cincinnati guys, you know, pushing others away.
Well, no, I love that some of the new school guys and guys who are looking at the game differently are starting to vote for these sorts of things because, you know, you get a situation like last year where Verlander got the Cy Young, and it's not like he had a bad season by any means. He was still fantastic. But when you really look at some of the numbers that we've come to value now, I don't know how Cole didn't win.
But it wasn't preposterous, and we've had some pretty I can't say the word. Pretty preposterous. I shouldn't do alliteration with P's because then I'll start to sound like I'm lisping. I think generally that the voting has improved because when you join the Baseball Writers Association, you can vote on year-end awards immediately. To vote for the Hall of Fame, you have to wait 10 years. And really, only the very first internet people that joined the Baseball Writers Association. Only the very first ones of those have been able to vote. You know, Keith Law, Christina Carl, Sean Foreman of Baseball Reference, who got in as a data provider. So there's a lot of, you know, internet, primarily internet people who did not become members until 2013, 2016, 2017.
So you've got to wait 6 more years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I did too. That was the year they really started being pushing forward. Derek Gould from St. Louis, he was the Baseball Writers Association president that year, and he's a very forward thinker, very progressive in this sense. So that's MLB.com guys could finally get in starting that year, and I think total there were like 70 writers admitted that year. I mean, I've written for papers, but like guest columns, I've never written for a paper full time. And, you know, 10 years ago, there were still a lot of really old newspaper writers that looked down on the internet writers as not real journalists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I mean, I get it when you think about it, maybe 10, 15 years, not even 10, 10 years ago is still.
Yeah, 10 was silly.
Yeah, but like 20 years ago.
Yeah, 20 years ago, maybe, but 10 years ago, it was silly because, I mean, people are making, I mean, I'm not working for exposure. I'm getting paid a good salary to do what I do. This is my job.
Right.
And
you've moved now, out of your mom's basement.
Yeah, well, I moved out of that a long time ago. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, now a lot of those newspapers have folded because the newspaper industry is in a bad place. And yep. A lot of those newspaper guys are internet writers now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that works out. Yeah.
The one other comp I want to talk about is LeMahieu, whose comp is Julio Franco. So that tells me we get to watch DJ LeMahieu play baseball for the Yankees until he's 50. And I'm very happy about that.
Or till he's 70, because I'm not really sure how old Julio Franco is.
Somewhere between 50 and 70 sounds about right.
Because the thing is, he played, you know, he made his last appearance when he was nearly 50. Or was he 50? No, he was like 48 or 49.
I think he didn't get 50. I mean, Ricky Henderson played in whatever sort of affiliated league until he was 50.
Yeah, they you couldn't drag Ricky away. Ricky's a player that always got a bad rap. I mean, that he was a guy who really, really loved playing baseball. And I think a lot of people didn't really appreciate that because he kept playing in independent leagues just because he loved it so much. And even when he retired, he was in one of those independent leagues. He still had like a .450 on base percentage or something in his final independent league season. How did we get to Ricky Henderson?
We got to Ricky Henderson through by way of Julio Franco, DJ LeMahieu. Right.
But the thing about Julio Franco is, I mean, he played almost till 50.
Yeah.
But when he was young, the rumor was that he was older than his birth certificate already.
Yeah.
So the joke is that, you know, he's Francisco Franco's little brother or older brother.
And as far as LeMahieu's projections go, you have him taking a little bit of a step back. He had an unbelievable year last year. He finished top five MVP voting. He was on a streak where it was ridiculous. He was hitting like close to .500 with runners in scoring position. Obviously, that's not sustainable. But still, when you look at his full season, it was amazing. But you do have him taking a little bit of a step back.
Yeah, it's hard to establish, you know. This is his, I mean, Fangraphs, we measured it as a 5-win season. This is his only 5-win season ever. He's had 2 3-win seasons in his career, and he's in his 30s. He's a really good player, and Zip still gives him a very solid projection right around all-star level, like 3.6.
Yeah, 3.6. Yeah, which is just,
I mean, we call 4 an all-star, and, you know, you round, that's an all-star. So that's still a very good prediction.
Well, here's where it's going to be interesting, because he's going to play second base mostly. And last year, especially in the second half, he was at first base where his defensive value was limited. And I think his best position is second base. So
yeah, he was always a good second baseman.
Yeah. And now the Yankees up the middle are going to have Gleyber and LeMahieu, which I think is a step up from last year of Didi at short and Gleyber at second base. So I think overall that position is a much bigger strength.
Yeah. It's the middle infield's pretty solid. Again, the whole team is solid. So I don't want to sense any greed.
No, you got to find some you got to at least like temper my expectations somewhere. Where are the holes on this team?
Well, if they have a few starting pitcher injuries beyond if Severino and Paxton, if they drag farther into the season, then I think that depth could be an issue. Because you look at the guys they call up. I mean, I don't know how comfortable they'd really be throwing Johnny Lasagna in.
He's been every time he's gotten a shot, it has not looked great out of the rotation. But just from watching him, I could see him working out in the bullpen.
Yeah, I think so too. But I can't really see them slotting him in for, you know, 140 innings necessarily.
Yeah, Michael King's exciting. I think we'll get a shot to get a couple starts if there's two injuries in the rotation in the first couple months of the season.
And you know, Garcia, of course, is exciting. But, I mean, he's still very young.
He's longer away, I think.
Yeah, I don't think they want to rush him necessarily. Because it would be rushing him. He, he's he doesn't have a lot of experience going deep into games. I mean, we're still seeing if they can keep him in the rotation, which I really hope they can, because he's a lot of fun. I think that is probably the team weakness, that a few that their ability to absorb starting pitcher injuries isn't that great right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why they did not trade Happ, which turns out might be a good move in the offseason, not trading him.
Because the thing about Happ is he's not good. He's not terrible, but he's okay. He's there.
Really bizarre season last year. He was so streaky. He would go on a 10-start stretch where he had like a mid-3 ERA and looked competent, and then he would go on a 7-start binge where it was just like 5 home runs a start.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, he's an old lefty who throws 90. My only complaint about Happ is the way he pronounces his name. Who pronounces their initials?
J.
Happ.
Yeah. I used to call it, whenever he would piss me off because of a bad start, I'd call him Ja.
Ja. I mean, my initials are DJ. If I went by DJ Zimborski, I wouldn't go as Dudge Zimborski, or JD Drew didn't go as Judd Drew.
He should have. I would have liked him better.
Oh, well, the thing about, JD Drew had another annoying thing, because do you know what JD stood for?
I think we've talked about this actually, because this is ringing a bell. It's opposite, right?
Yeah, it's David Jonathan.
David John, yeah.
JD stands for David Jonathan. How does that even work?
Well, his mom was dyslexic, so when she filled out the birth certificate, she wrote it backwards. That's the only explanation.
If we had this exact conversation, how did we have this exact conversation about JD Drew before?
This is all sounding very familiar, so I do think we had this exact conversation. Because, Dan, when you come on the podcast, I have like a list of questions for you, and then I get to about 3 out of the 20 because we go off on tangents.
Oh, okay. So I guess what people are, if we did talk about this last year, then what we're giving people is a clip show.
Yeah, exactly. So here's maybe one weakness. Third base. Could third base be a weakness for the Yankees?
It could be, but I think they're cognizant of their issues there. I think if they had gone in and they expected Andujar to take the position back, and field there, I think that would have been a weakness. But I don't think, I know you're trying to find a weakness so that we can have like a little bit of levity, but I think Urshela is fine there. I don't think he's going to be quite as good as last year. I mean, he had a 130 something OPS plus.
Yeah. You have him at 105. If he's a 105 with a good glove, maybe his glove is overrated, but I think it's a good glove and it's blows Andujar's out of the water.
Yeah. Andujar can't really play third base. Just as simple as that. Even before the injury, he wasn't really that good at third base.
No, he was terrible. He was the worst third baseman in the league in 2018. But if you have Urshela at a 105 OPS plus with good defense, you're going to bat him ninth and he'll be fine.
Yeah. He's Scott Brosius.
Love Scott Brosius.
Yeah. I love Scott Brosius because Brosius also sounds like a great adjective.
So how is that not the player comp? Instead, you got Casey McGee for Gio Urshela.
Well, of course, they're offensive comps. And Brosius was older at this point, too.
Yeah, Urshela's about, is he 29 at this point? I think he's older.
Yeah, it's tricky. I kind of get him and the other Indian third base confused. He is, 28, you were correct.
28.
I was going to guess 27. How old was Scott Brosius? I mean, Brosius was pretty old at that point.
Yeah, I think when he came to the Yankees, Brosius.
Yeah, because he was the A's for so long, and then he came to the Yankees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unless I'm compressing all this in my head.
No. You've got it right. I don't know his exact age, but I would guess 33.
He was 32. Okay. He was 32, 33.
Yeah, that was going to be my guess.
Yeah, I'm actually opening up Zips, and I'm going to find you comps that you like better for Urshela.
Okay. Well, I wasn't crazy about the Gleyber Torres comp, Erasmus Ramirez. At first glance, I was like, oh boy, I hope Gleyber Torres is a better player than Erasmus Ramirez. But then I realized I maybe wasn't giving Ramirez enough credit for his really solid middle of his career.
Yeah, I don't have this comp in front of me. I'm just sorry. I'm pulling everything up very quickly to try to to first find the Urshelikov. Then we can move on to Torres and fight that one out. I'm trying to filibuster while I do this.
Okay, yeah.
I'm trying to be very quick here.
Yeah, hey, I'll just. New York, I'll talk. So, I mean, I do think, just so you know, like I think third base, corner infield, I could see going awry. And because they haven't really had a steady guy at either of those positions. So that's, I think, a concern amongst many Yankees fans. And it's one of them is that Giroshella is not legit. And he caught lightning in a bottle thanks to the juice ball last year.
I mean, that is always a risk. I mean, you look at 1987, which was kind of a weird year, too. And there were guys like, you know, Dale Swaim who hit crazy things out of nowhere. Let's see.
Yeah.
Carney Lansford, Jeff Kent.
Yeah, Jeff Kent.
Buddy Bell.
Yeah, and I think that's probably, I mean, last year we might look at in 5 years and be like, well, that was just a weird year. Brett Gardner slugged 500.
Carney Lansford, Mike Lowell, Jose Vidro, the original Frank Thomas, Brooke Jacoby, Joe Randa, Aubrey Huff, who's kind of been a jerk lately.
I do not recommend following Aubrey Huff on Twitter.
Tim Nehring. And Nehring was better than people remember. People have kind of forgotten. I'm going to go off on a tangent here. It's surprising how the 90s Red Sox teams, it shocks me how people have forgotten just how good Tim Nehring and John Valentin were. That's all.
That is it really, though, that shocking?
No, but John Valentin, he had like an 8-WAR season once.
Did he really? Wow.
Yeah. I think. I'm pulling it up real quick. I could be a liar. You know, I lie sometimes.
I remember John Valentin just because I used to play the Red Sox in like All-Star Baseball 99, and he was always on the Red Sox roster.
Yeah, from 93, here is his WAR totals. 5.2, 4.1, 8.2, 2.8, 4.3, 4.5.
Steroids. Steroids are a hell of a drug.
He only hit 20 home runs twice there.
Oh, really? So
yeah.
Okay, did he have just 50 doubles a season thanks to the Green Monster?
Well, he did have a lot of doubles. He had a 47 double season, a 44. His on-base percentages were 400, 399, 374.
Yeah, really, really solid overall offensive player, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, he played shortstop.
So you're going to get a little bit of a bump from there as far as WAR goes for defensive value.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that I guess transitions nicely to Glaber, who's, I mean, five-year WAR totals of 25.6 is unbelievable. I think he's one of the budding superstars in the game.
Yeah, Zips loves him. You look at those long-term projections, and they're just mwah.
Yeah, and he's like one of these guys that when he came to the big leagues, I think people realize like, oh, he can hit 30 home runs because that was never talked about in any scouting report.
Yeah, but the thing is, when you have a player that's that talented, that young, and at that high level, relatively speaking, you really don't even know what they can do.
Yeah,
it comes down to it,
right? Yeah, that's, I guess you got to take all of, you know, those sort of scouting reports with a grain of salt. And you know, I was reading just before we started recording the prospect Zips prospects rankings, and
yeah, I did it this year. Last
year, is
this
new? Because I don't remember this.
I didn't do it last year. I did it with ESPN every year, but last year at the normal time I do them, Eric Langenhagen and Kylie McDaniel were doing their prospects. So I was going to wait until they had done all their teams because I didn't want to kind of, you know, bump into their turf. But by the time they finished all their teams, it was like the end of May. And it seemed weird to do a May list. So I decided to start fresh this year with planning out an actual time to do it. So I've done it for 7 years with one missing year.
Okay. So that's why I was unaware of it, but I found it interesting because I noticed some different guys on here than your other maybe traditional prospect rankings.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool because it's kind of talking about something slightly different than, say, like a Baseball America or a MLB Pipeline or something.
Because the thing is, prospect watchers, they're dreamers by nature. They're not looking, you know, to find a 1.5 win a year player. That's it's not exciting. I mean, it's like ambitious. They want to see the guys who could become stars. While Zips, you know, has no romance of that nature. Zips says, hey, you know, we're going to look for stars, but we're also going to look for okay players. So there's a lot of guys that Zips liked better than some. Zips will sometimes miss out on these toolsy guys that might suddenly blow up and be huge. Zips sometimes misses those guys, but Zips does a lot of good finding players like Kyle Hendricks, because Zips loved Kyle Hendricks as a prospect, and nobody else really did.
Right, he's not going to get any glowing scouting reports from a guy watching him from the stands.
Yeah, no one's going to say, oh, look at that changeup that this minor league pitcher is, and oh, he's throwing 88. Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, so, good movement on the corners.
And if you look at the Zips, because I actually linked, I don't know if you saw it, but on Twitter I actually did the 2014, which was the first year I posted the.
Oh, I didn't see that. So retroactively going to see how you did.
Yeah, and if I can find it, because I don't name files very well. I have so many files named new document and then like a random series of characters after that.
New document 75AB942.
Yeah, a lot of ASDF, ASDF, ASDF things. But Zips was in the lead. I'm opening it up really quickly. Twitter. I'm looking through my Twitter media, and the problem was I post so much nonsense that it takes a while to scroll down to the thing I'm looking for. Like, I have, what do I do in the middle of the night? I have pictures of Return of Zork, Oregon Trail, tacos.
Yeah, your Twitter feed is really a stream of consciousness, and which is, I think, what it was meant to be originally, what Twitter was meant to be. So you're using the platform correctly.
As of right now, from 2014, Zips, the top 100 Zips from the 2014 list have 586 WAR in the majors.
That sounds good. If it's a top 100, that's 5.8 per player.
Yeah, Keith Law, 554. The Fangraphs list that year, done by Mark Hewlett, 563. MLB Pipeline, 449. And Baseball America did better at 643, but Baseball America also considered Cuban and Japanese players. And so they had Tanaka with 18, Abreu with 17. They had Soler.
So they're including Cuban established players, not just international signings, because you do have international prospects in here.
Yeah, so if we had done Tanaka, we all would have done better if we had been able to, if we put Tanaka. And they also had Carlos Martinez, who wasn't actually a rookie at that point. He had already used his rookie of the year. So I'm pretty happy with that. That Zips has more WAR, and you can see a lot in some of the players that Zips had on the list and the others did not. Zips was the only one. Only two of five had Marcus Semien on the list. Colton Wong.
A lot of people upset that Semien got more MVP votes than DJ LeMahieu last year.
Yeah, well, there's not a lot to be grumpy about. So they can be grumpy about it. Zips really liked John Gray and had Robbie Ray on the list in 2014, and nobody else did. And sometimes these guys work out. I mean, it had Mookie Betts as the number 26 prospect.
That worked out.
MLB Pipeline didn't have him in the 100. Keith had him at 61. Fangraphs 59.
And it's Baseball so America funny because 75. It was the Pipeline probably didn't have him because of his size. Like, I guarantee you that was like the number one thing that they wrote negatively about him.
And the thing is, Betts looked at the time like he wasn't going to be one of those high upside guys. It turns out he was one of those high upside guys. So Zips will like different players. It will be more suspicious of some of those low level minor leaguers. But I think in the end, it gives you information that's useful. And that's what I try to do. I mean, it's not just about, you know, hitting a target. It's the question is, can people use this to, you know, help them in some way? And people do seem to be able to get use out of my projections. So,
yeah, I found it to be interesting when I was looking at what Yankees made the top 100. And obviously, Devi Garcia and Jason Dominguez are there, and they're on every prospect board. But then, you know, this list did not have other guys that a lot of Yankee fans are probably used to hearing about, like Esteban Florial or Clark Schmidt. and it had some other lower level, lesser known guys. You know, they were back towards the 80s and 90s, but it's still names that we're not as used to seeing.
Yeah, and there were actually several Yankees that didn't quite make it. So it's not like some of these guys were way off. Dominguez, of course, Zips can't really do anything about
that. Right, and that's what I was going to ask you, because he has no data on him.
Yeah, there's nothing.
He's 16 years old, but everyone, I mean, they call him a freak. They call him the Martian because he's going to be he's a freak talent. So do you have to kind of – what do you do in that situation for this sort of ranking?
Well, when Zips didn't even consider him, and I actually made a note about that, because Zips works with data. If there's no data, there's no insight. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to do something like do a proxy where he's like on everyone else's top prospect list, so Zips likes him too. I'm not going to, you know, do that nonsense. I'm just going to say, yeah, the projection tool does not help you here. And that's just the case. So I think it's better to do that than to, you know, dish out a bunch of nonsense.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it was interesting. I encourage people to check that out. All right. Let's last thing I want to talk about. And I don't know if you've heard, but the Astros got caught cheating.
Oh, God.
No. Are you sick of talking about it yet?
I'm starting to run out of jokes. Well, and so I will.
I kind of want to take a different angle to it.
I even have a t-shirt that I made. So I'm interested in things until they stop being funny to me.
Okay, and that's terrible. What's the t-shirt say?
Oh, did you ever play A Legend of Zelda?
No, so this joke is going to be lost on me.
Oh, well, anyway, there's at the opening of the game, you're in the little Link's in a cave, and there's an old man saying, it's dangerous out there alone, take this, and there's a little sword. And it's a famous image of people of a certain age who played that game. So I replace it with a trash can instead of a sword, and said it's dangerous to face pictures alone. Here, take this. if you've played the game, you'd understand the joke.
No, I get the joke. Yeah,
yeah. You don't have to humor me. It's much funnier if you know it. But I like stories as long as they're funny to me, and that's kind of, you know, maybe not the most productive take in this world, but that's just the way I am. My favorite thing about life is being amused.
Yeah, and well, this was amusing at first, and now it's just not going away, and I don't think it's going away because I don't think we've heard the full story.
Yeah, it was mishandled in so many levels. Just it's hard to know who to get the angriest at. I think that the Astros at this point, they should know that they had to make a heel turn. They're going to have to play up on this.
Well, I'm sure you saw their organization at spring training stealing everyone's signs, physically stealing all their signs. So maybe that's a start of the heel turn, and they're just leaning into the joke.
Yeah, they should, because that's the way you do it. That's something that A-Rod never did. I thought when A-Rod was when he had, you know, first all the lab work that he had used at the time, I thought he should have embraced it and done a heel turn. If I had been A-Rod, every time I hit a home run, I would have mimicked injecting my muscles with a needle. I would have, you know, taken out full billboard ads bashing the fans of every town on a road trip.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Because he had FU money, so he could just do stuff like that.
Yeah. But he really wanted to be loved.
That was his biggest flaw.
Yeah, and nobody at that point really wanted to love him. It's changed since. He's kind of become the beloved figure, and people don't like Jeter as much. It's kind of weird how that happened.
It happened quickly too.
Yeah.
It was like one postseason of A-Rod calling games on Fox, and then all of a sudden everyone was on his side.
Yeah, he broadcasts for a season, and Jeter buys part of the Marlins and runs them for a season, and then the public opinion of them almost like flipped completely.
Yeah. Well, speaking of steroids, what do you think, in your opinion, is a bigger advantage? Using steroids and performance-enhancing drugs, or if you know what pitch is coming?
I'd say I know what pitch is coming, but I don't really think either are really huge deals necessarily. The problem I see with the sign stealing, it isn't even that it's a big effect. It's that you're trying to cheat. And if you're trying to cheat, it doesn't really matter if the effect is nothing or if the effect is huge.
Right.
The idea is that you're trying to cheat. It's the same with corked bats. There isn't really a lot of evidence that corking your bat does anything, but the point is that you're trying to cheat. And the fact that you're trying to cheat, that's the problem. I don't think that the Astros would have really been that much worse if they hadn't stolen signs. But the fact is they had, you know, the guilty conscience. They had that, you know, the mens rea. They were trying to undermine the rules and, you know, the rule of law in baseball. And that's where the crime is. And that's what should be punished. The problem is that at this point, you pretty much had to give them immunity because there was no realistic way that Manfred was going to be able to do anything about it. The thing is that they could have done something about this years ago.
Yep. When baseball, they, always one step behind.
Yeah. When they sent out messages to teams that went like the Red Sox were fooling around a few years back, they should have also been opening up discussions with the MLBPA talking about electronic sign stealing to make it known to work out punishments and rules and the like, because in baseball players have to approve rules. They can't, MLB can't just implement them on them. That's why MLB couldn't just decide to start drug testing without the MLBPA's approval. It's the same here. They could have sat down and they wouldn't have had any problems because no players want other players stealing signs with electronic, by electronic means in a game. They could have done something. But then by the time they actually had players doing it and they were caught, they couldn't really do anything about it. If Manfred had said, we're banning all the players on the roster for 50 games, the MLBPA would have immediately filed a grievance because they're essentially required to by law, and they'd be slapped, MLB would be slapped down very, very quickly because there's ample precedent, both in the rules and in arbitration, that MLB just can't impose rules like that. So if you can't punish the players, all you might as well give them immunity since you can't punish them anyway and get as much information as you can out of them. So Manfred's problem wasn't this, how he acted right here with not punishing the players. It's that they didn't take any the opportunity to get this taken care of years ago.
Well, and I also think that you have big name players like Bellinger and Trout and Judge basically saying that players should have been suspended, which flies in the face of what the Players Association was going to do. And maybe those guys didn't know the rules and that baseball was just going to file a grievance and get those, any of those penalties wiped out. But that just fuels the fire for fans and be like, oh, see, Aaron Judge said that these guys should be suspended, so they should be suspended.
Yeah. The more black helicopter-ish part of my personality wonders if Manfred, one of the reasons Manfred was happy to go out and grant immunity is because it would cause some infighting among the players.
Think this is a big conspiracy and this is all going to be good for baseball marketing?
Well, not necessarily a conspiracy, but I think that not to improve the marketing, but kind of to keep the MLBPA not necessarily as cohesive going into contract negotiations.
Oh.
Because there was actually a lot of belief that that's what they did with the steroids, that they let the players get angry about it. And then the players were more than willing to fight with each other about steroid use and to eventually grant drug testing without any concession in their favor.
Is this an informed opinion or is this just a theory amongst
people? A slightly informed opinion. I've heard some whispers and it's hard to say what's true is, but I mean, in the end, I think it's more, I don't think it's actually like a conspiracy theory. I think maybe Manfred just saw an opportunity, maybe, but it is interesting to think about.
Yeah. Well, it just baffles me that they could have implemented these replay technologies and these camera rooms that are just feet from the dugout back in 2014. And no one had the foresight to think that baseball players might cheat because they've, only been cheating for 100+ years.
Yeah,
baseball players love to cheat so much?
Yeah, everyone wants to get a benefit out of it. And this is, of course, after they knew that teams were doing something like that. So they can't even claim that they didn't even know that it was possible, because they did. And baseball players have always tried to cheat. I mean, you go back to the New York Giants in 1951. They Leo DeRocher and Herman Franks. Herman Franks with binoculars, and they had a buzzer in the dugout.
Right.
This has been done a while. This isn't anything new. But you know, baseball likes to shut the barn door after the horse is gone.
Yeah, it's classic. It's classic baseball reaction instead of proactive. But yeah, and I think that's now the thing that is upsetting me most is that it's just the way they handle these sorts of things is frustrating from some coming, you know, me watching. I'm someone who loves the game of baseball and wants it to be the best it possibly can. And then I got to sit there for an offseason and watch this crap happen.
And what was truly pathetic is the week that it broke, you at the same time had them talking about expanding the playoffs to 14 teams. you had them talking about, contracting a quarter of the minor league teams, a fifth.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, the Astros are only the third most depressing story from baseball.
Well, hey, I can't wait for that reality TV show of when teams are going to pick their opponent. That's going to be that's going to be a fun hour of our life on MLB Network.
I never thought I'd say this, but I think Bud Selig was the better commissioner.
Oh, wow.
Bud Selig was terrible in a lot of ways, especially with player relations, but Bud Selig actually loved the sport of baseball. I don't necessarily get the feeling that Redford really is that crazy about baseball.
Some of these things, some of these actions, it definitely has that sort of vibe. Or maybe he was in love, loved baseball at one point and now is just annoyed by his job. Like many people in the world, it's a passion at first and then eventually it turns into a job.
Oh God, I wonder what's going to happen to me because this is the only thing I know how
to do. I said most
right.
People, not all people. Don't worry.
I'm scared now.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time talking, suffering through the cheating scandal talk. Hopefully we're getting to the end of that unless more information comes out.
We had the Red Sox announcement coming eventually.
Yeah, that's been coming for 2 weeks. So when is it? Are we going to see it?
How many years did it seem for them to have the Chris Bryant grievance actually heard and decided? I think he filed a grievance in 2017 or something.
Yeah, I don't know what the Red Sox, since Cora's now got shown the door anyway, I feel like that's the scapegoat. So it's gonna be less headline-y than what the Astros got.
Yeah, we'll see.
Dan, I appreciate the time. You guys can all follow Dan on Twitter at DZimborski. That starts with an S, not a Z. So just Google Zips and you'll find it. I appreciate the time, Dan.
Always fun. Thanks for having me.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.